the business is changing at an exponential rate. And if you're like me, there are far more questions to get answers to than you have time in the day. Each week, I sit down with a unique guest and get their perspective on something interesting in business. It could be something I'm trying to learn, a topic we're seeing happen in the world. It could be demand gen, artificial intelligence, go-to-market, strategy, branding. I get curious, and I'll go lots of places. I hope you enjoy listening to these conversations as much as I enjoy having them. Before we get started with today's guest, please make sure you like and subscribe. Now, on to the show. Welcome to the Summit. I'm Kyle Hamer, your host, and excited to bring you another episode. Today's topic of pain, burden, well, an insight for those of us who need it, is marketecture. What it is, why you need it, and why it matters. Our special guest today is an expert. They've been in and out of RevOps, marketing ops, actually even started a community, bringing together some of the best minds in the revenue operations, marketing operations, sales operations world, Mike Rizzo. Somebody who doesn't need an introduction, but if you don't know Mike, you're going to learn about him today. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it. Always happy to be chatting with you and now on the podcast. So, you know, this is a special endeavor for us.
I'm very excited. Now, you know, I gave you a little bit of build up, but for those who don't know you, why don't you tell them about yourself just a little bit here? Give us a 30 to 90 second overview of the Riz.
Yes, my name is Mike Rizzo. I am the founder of a community known as the MOPROS, which stands for Marketing Operations Professionals. And in June, we're almost a year old now. In June last year, so that would have been 2022, we launched marketingops.com, which became the official home of the community, the MOPROS. And ultimately, we are on a mission to bring education and some boundaries, some structure and some guidance to what it means to be a marketing operations professional and really elevate everybody that's in this vocation or discovering it for the first time. And I like to always say we're trying to educate the market top and tail, right? If you're discovering marketing operations for the first time, well, there's a place for you to come talk shop. It doesn't matter what technologies you use. You're probably faced with challenges just like the rest of us, and you shouldn't have to go it alone. And if you're an executive and you have no idea what marketing operations is or why it is so critically beneficial to your business to have a marketing operations professional, we also produce research and guides and all kinds of content for you to understand why you need to hire a marketing operations professional. So educating the market top and tail.
Yeah, well, you know, I've enjoyed being a part of the community almost since inception. I wasn't community member number five or anything crazy like that, but I did get in, I think, in the first couple hundred. And you've been around for what, 3 years, 4 years now? You've been around for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, the community's been around for, technically the Slack channel, which has become sort of the go-to spot for all the communications on the community side, started in 2017, but back then, it was just a way for me to be really selfish in my role to try to like meet other people that knew what the heck I was talking about. And really, the growth in the community started in 2019. So just the last couple of years, we've been growing at about 110 people a month on average since 2019, which has been really quite incredible to see.
That is awesome. Congratulations on your success there. I know that the community is providing a lot of value. As a matter of fact, earlier today, somebody was asking a question about where can I get a Pardot consultant or contractor who can do both emails and landing pages on the developer side. And I was like, you know, I don't know anybody personally, but I know the community to go ask. So it's a great resource out there.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's, you know, it's our success collectively. Yes, it's exciting that this whole thing has been growing the way that it has, but the reason it continues to grow is because everybody is helpful. I think that's a unique kind of sort of quality of what it means to be a marketing operations professional. It's like you just genuinely want to help people figure stuff out, which includes your peers in the space. So we're a very fortunate group to all have each other, I think. That's for sure.
Well, a little tongue in cheek here. This ends the sponsorship portion of the podcast today, brought to you by MOPROS. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, we were certainly not intending to just talk about MoPros and marketingops.com the whole day.
No, we definitely aren't. But I do think that for the listeners, a bit of context as far as what marketing operations, revenue operations is, could you kind of give just a high level backdrop of those roles, their impact to the business before we get to actually today's topic?
Yeah, and before I even get there, I just want to let you know you were founding member number 452.
Yeah, see, I wasn't even in the top 100. So like I showed up late to the party.
So I had to go look that up since you brought it up. So high level question was high level sort of overview of marketing ops. Is that if I'm playing that back right?
Yeah, marketing. I mean, so we're going to talk about marketecture today. And I think in order to understand context for what we're going to talk about, you probably understand the role, what they do and impact to the business, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, like the role has evolved over the last decade for sure. But I think fundamentally what's come out of the last decade plus is that a marketing operations professional is responsible for orchestration of people, process, and technology. And I always start with the people part of that because like none of this happens without lots of active conversations between teams and getting alignment. And so that orchestration piece is really, really key. They're a relatively technical professional, typically. They would understand sort of object orientation and relationships between how different marketing tools are interacting and talking to one another, sales tools for that matter, or even client success products that are enabling your client success team, which is why that's such a strong fit for heading into a sort of a RevOps oriented role for those that are still defining that. But yeah, the marketing operations professional at the end of the day is responsible for people, process, and technology alignment, and really understanding like what is it that you would like to accomplish, and you know, and maybe it's in a go-to-market motion. You want to enter a new market. What are the tools you need to be able to do that? What are the compliance that you need to consider? They need to have a pretty strong understanding of the breadth of possibilities to guide an organization in the direction of what's sort of the right possible steps versus creating technical debt that you're going to have to pay for later, literally pay for later, lots of money to go fix. So you want them on your team as soon as possible.
Fair enough. But I think you say the word technical debt, and I heard at least six or seven people on the podcast breathe, inhale really fast, go, ooh, that sounds like that's painful. Let's talk about the word that you've coined, or at least as you shared with me, marketecture. What is it? Why does it matter? And how does it, I mean, what is it? I mean, the first time you mentioned it to me, I was like, well, I understand like software architecture, talking to like a data architect or marketing or like a systems architect, those type of things. But when you put it in the terms of marketecture, is it the same? Is it different? What is it?
Yeah. I think it's the lens of system architecture, but through the view of the go-to-market motion. And there's this customer journey that you're trying to orchestrate, right? At the end of the day, like marketing operations professionals, while you're responsible for all this people, process, and technology stuff, so, you know, think tools like your CRM and your marketing automation platform and maybe a data enrichment provider or even a reverse ETL, whatever all that means, right? But like a CDP, a data warehouse and moving data around, ultimately that's in service of your customer's journey. And you're like, you truly care about, well, what does that look like? And marketecture is, in my mind, is a way to think about, okay, well, what is that entire experience sort of end to end going to be for our customer? And how do we as an organization enable our teams, whether they're in marketing, sales, or client success, to understand where that individual prospect or customer is on their journey? So marketecture, in my mind, is all about this idea of orchestrating your customer's journey through various marketing and sales and client success technologies, and making sure the right place, the right message, the right data is all getting to the right people at the right time. That is a totally different skill set from someone who is building just like a, well, I say just as if it's easy, building any sort of data architecture around a data warehouse or even products, right? When you're building a product and you think about it, an account structure where you have many users with different roles and permissions, like those kinds of, for those that build SaaS apps, like these are the things that they're thinking about. Like how does the object orientation and the relationship of all these things within the system work? If you abstract that away, you have to know as a marketing operations professional, you often have to know a bit about what's going on under the scenes for a, specifically in the context of a SaaS example. If I know I have accounts with many users and they all have a different experience inside of my product, I'm probably going to want those individuals to have a bit of a different experience as they move through their journey with us as a customer. So maybe a way to just shorten that up is an admin probably doesn't need to receive the same communications as the end user that has no rights to do anything that the admin does, right? So the admin has all the power and the individual user doesn't have any. And so I don't want to tell this individual user, hey, this is where you can go update your billing settings. It's like, I don't even have the rights to be able to do that. So if I understand the journey that my customers are going on, and the types of people that they are, the types of prospects that they are, I can ensure that they're receiving the right messages at the right time. Hopefully that didn't overcomplicate it.
No, it doesn't seem like it overcomplicates it, but from a clarification standpoint, it sounds like it's different but similar. I mean, we've got people to do lead management system administration. We have people that are marketing automation specialists. We have people that do email marketing campaigns and in-app messaging. Like there's theories around product-led growth and how you get different technologies to deploy that. It sounds to me like this is like marrying all of those together plus plus. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it is. Like one of the things I keep talking about is, you know, I guess just to turn it around and ask you and the audience, right? Like if you were to try to ask your, I don't know, your CTO or CIO, you know, what are the tools and like the systems you need to have in place to communicate with these people and what data needs to go where and when, and, you know, how do these tools talk to one another? I don't know anybody that knows how to answer those questions, right? And so we keep talking about this career path sort of journey for marketing operations professional. And when you think about marketecture, that's, I'm not saying you need to do this or have the ability to do any of this stuff overnight. In fact, I don't know that being sort of a marketect, if we're going to keep on this slogan or this tagline that we've created, I don't think that's the right path for everyone either, right? So maybe people in this role don't want to try to understand how all of these overarching systems are going to communicate and what does that data orchestration and all the movement really look like. There are going to definitely be folks that want to stay deeply entrenched in like one particular platform and be just wizards at it, right? Like they're experts in HubSpot or Marketo or Pardot, and they can do just crazy things. But there's definitely going to be the folks that are trying to understand your data model and how you can set up an entire journey for a customer. And so, yeah, it's all of those things plus plus. And ultimately, you know, Raja from G&W Consulting talks about CMO ops. we're trying to figure out like what the heck we call this new potential sort of executive that says, hey, you've got a business you want to bring to market and I've got all these people, processes, and technology that I need to sort of orchestrate to help you do that. And it's like, well, whose responsibility is that? And the answer today is like it's largely unclear, but I think it's the marketing operations professional's opportunity to go take it on.
It's an interesting conundrum that you bring up talking about Raja with CMO ops and who owns it. You know, I think about an organization who maybe a normal B2B SaaS typically have done an enterprise sale and looking to go down market maybe to an SMB offering and saying, well, we might want to support it with some BDR outreach or SDR outreach, but really we would like to make it a frictionless sale and we need to do a free trial to then converting into an e-commerce. It seems to me that in your marketecture model and the things that you're talking about, there would be technologies and practices that very much fit in your normal marketing tech stack, your HubSpot for marketing automation or, you know, a Marketo for lead management, even your your website, whether it's WordPress or otherwise, for curating that, you know, that first getting started experience through the website. But then there's a moment where you're going to move into financial tools and business systems where we now have to get billing information, credit card information, those elements over to the finance team, transact, posting back payments. And it's a whole nother level of data and information flow that somebody may have to tackle that today, you're right, it's probably a hot potato, right? Ops doesn't own it. Finance doesn't own it. Marketing is like, well, we need to drive free trials and we're held accountable for how we develop this new market. Where does that go? How are you seeing organizations begin to start attacking marketecture or thinking about marketecture for setting themselves up for success moving forward?
I don't know that I've seen organizations start with the end in mind, the way that I think would be the ideal. Instead, I think what we're seeing is a little bit of a revelation of, oh, we probably need to, you know, to your point in the example you just provided, right? Oh, we'd like to maybe move down market and create a freemium offer that has this e-commerce sort of transaction thing that happens. And now we need to figure out, you know, who's going to sort of help us with all that. And I think, you know, I don't know if and when someone is going to go build a company from zero to one and start with marketecture in mind. I'm sure it's happening today, you know, even in our organization with marketingops.com, like, yeah, I'm thinking about all of the different touch points and the ways that our, you know, individuals are coming into our ecosystem free or paid or what have you. But the reality is like we're focused on creating valuable experiences, not necessarily the whole tech infrastructure. And so it's like the cobbler's children have no shoes problem, right? Like we don't focus on our own problems. But what I am seeing is heavy reliance on folks like myself or other, you know, technical marketing operations professionals to come in and instrument a journey. You know, one of the organizations that I've been talking to and working with over the last month or so is on this path right now. They're trying to launch a freemium product like imminently. And there is a whole slew of IT professionals, data and system architecture that we're working through. And the only ways that we could do that was interfacing with some IT folks, the sales folks, the marketing folks, and the product team on, well, what is the subscription information that we have? What subscription platform are we using? You know, all of those things, like Recurly ended up being one of the things that came into the conversation, right? Okay, well, what are we getting out of a tool like that? And where can we put that data to enable that onboarding nurture and that first time experience? The problem is, like I said, these companies aren't starting with the end in mind. They're starting to create these new markets. And now you have to go unravel a whole slew of, you know, technology problems and the sort of the quote unquote way things are done in order to, like, you know, generate an experience for your customer. And that's the technical debt piece that's really scary. But yeah, like, you know, it's building business. So,
well, it is building business, right? And I think in the current economic conditions we have, there's this very welcome move back towards profitability, right? Where instead of us just growing at all costs and dumping VC money and private equity money, or even just, you know, somebody's investment into spending frivolously, there's this, hey, we need to grow profitably. So thinking about not only the short term, but the long term phases of your marketecture or even your overall tech stack to support that customer journey is going to force companies to behave differently. Recently, I worked with an organization who they had homegrown. So they brought together multiple companies and they had a homegrown billing system. Well, the homegrown billing system wasn't giving the finance team the information that they needed. They couldn't actually handle subscriptions, cancel. Like it was a labor of love, and it was a lot of administrative overhead where, you know, it gave people jobs. And I think that that's important, but it was also things that could be automated away with a tool like Recurly, Chargeify. And ultimately, as they began looking at what they needed, the thing I heard was, is that their, the thing that I experienced was, is that their, their operational model, the way that they wanted to run their finance, their bookings and revenue, was actually not fitting with the way their subscription or customer experience was. And so that they had a high velocity flywheel model, but they had an enterprise like slow 30, 60, 90 day procurement period for selling the software. And it wasn't lining up with, you know, what they were trying to do from a finance standpoint. And so they had some technical challenges around that. At the same time, the in-app messaging that they had built was no longer sufficient. So they had to rip that out. And they were looking at Intercom, Gainsight, you know, some of the different tools to try and deploy in-app messages to create those first onboarding experiences. But those systems were sitting in silos separate from their HubSpot and their Salesforce. Are those the types of challenges that you're talking about organizations need to think through the market texture, or is it something different?
It's that, yes. Those I think come up more frequently, to be honest. And the reason for that is that there's this sort of milestone, this thing that happened, right? And you know, now you're trying to solve for a problem, you know, in this case, in your example, you know, subscriptions and those kinds of things are problematic, and now we got to solve this thing. The live chat solution we have today just isn't really cutting it. And so now we got to kind of go fix that. and so I think those are great opportunities to start instrumenting potentially a better orchestration of how all of those systems talk to one another. However, I feel bad that like we're just dropping like tons of company names in this, but like it is what it is. It's we have a MarTech landscape of over 11,000 tools, folks. I'm familiar with just a one little iota of all of them.
Yes.
but you know, I think my eyes really started to be opened most recently, probably in the last, I don't know, 6 to 9 months. And when I think about marketecture, I think it comes down to this idea of like, warehouse native applications or system orchestration through tools like Asynchrony, for example. If you're building out your business process around a tool like, I'm just gonna lean on Asynchrony for a second here because it's the one I'm most familiar with. If you orchestrate all of your business rules around connecting your all of these data points, your Chargeify, your WordPress website, your HubSpot, your Marketo, your Pardot, your Salesforce, your any type of ERP or billing system that you have, if you sort of plug that in to a system like Asynchrony and write your business process there, it's actually a totally different set of skills that we were talking about just a moment ago, where you're trying to sit here and go, okay, well, what is the source of truth and what are the rules in which I need to say, hey, if this data gets updated from our billing department, I need to send that information to these three other places because it's really, really relevant that they understand that like the email address changed or the billing contact changed or, you know, the system admin is now going to need an update or what have you. It also gives you an opportunity to create business process in a sort of centralized environment that like weirdly, not that it's super easy. It's not like a light switch that you just turn on and off whenever you want. But when you think about ripping and replacing products, which, you know, probably happens more than it should technically, but often, you know, I think the go-to example is a marketing automation platform is ripped and replaced often. If you had that business process outlined inside of a tool that's external of what you would call the quote unquote native integration between a Marketo and a Salesforce, for example, or a HubSpot and a Salesforce, if you actually had it connected to a system that orchestrates your business, you can kind of rip and replace that product a little bit easier. Because you basically have said, hey, the rule is when the data comes from whatever insert marketing automation platform I have here, the flow of that data, the rule of who gets updated and where does that information need to be sent after that is sort of established, right? It's just the tool that's helping to send the data somewhere else, and it's the tool you're using to collect it. That level of thinking, even product level data, if you're a SaaS company and passing it into a system like that, is more of the architecture piece that I'm talking about. It just doesn't come up a lot, right? And I don't know that it's like a data engineer's problem to solve. I don't know that it's like a CTO or CIO's problem to solve, but I think all of them do need to talk together.
You know, as you're describing these challenges, or at least from a technology standpoint, I keep coming back to you. You started off by talking about this being a customer journey, customer experience type problem you're trying to solve. And I think about using a chatbot. For example, if I go to my cell phone provider and I need to chat with them, I chat them after signing into my account, but then they ask me to re-verify all of my information, including my account number and all these different things, you know, give us your email address. And so some of that is security. But the other part of that, if I'm a user, is it's that customer support tech on the other side of that chatbot doesn't have any visibility other than the fact that I've got a live person on this line that knows their name is Kyle. And that's all I know. And I got to figure out the rest of stuff just so I can get from the word jump. Are companies being more intentional in thinking about improving that customer experience from removing some of those friction points and those stick points? Or is this something where it's kind of the early days and people are just going, oh, this is the next level of fluidity we've got to get to?
Yeah, I think there are companies that are starting to adjust now. You know, I think Salesforce, when they started talking about the, you know, what was it, the 360 degree sort of view for your customers, it was probably 5-6 years ago when they started talking about the need for this level of orchestration across your systems. So I think that message has seeded the market. People are starting to pay attention. There's a driving force of user behavior like yourself that is saying, I want to be able to, you know, I guess we won't say tweet you because Twitter's a kind of all over the place right now, but I want to be able to send you a text message, you know, to engage with you, or I want to be able to email you or what have you. And that ability to create that unique ID, that identifier for me as an individual, and then have everything in front of that rep or that whatever kind of rep it is, I think is really being the forcing factor is the market and the generation of, you know, tech savvy end users that are coming up right now. The millennials, the gen, whatever they are, Y, X, Z, all the things that are coming up now, they're forcing that type of desire for an experience. And companies just now, you know, I think we get, I just talked about it a second ago, right? Like we get stuck in what we're trying to do as an organization, and we're not even like really self-auditing our experience for that customer. And so, you know, I think there's just not enough organizations that are focused on, well, how do we actually improve that? And I think to bring this full circle, you know, we talked about RevOps, we at least hint at it. You know, I think that is part of the reason why RevOps as a category is desired. You know, a lot of this orchestration and architecture stuff is about this customer journey. And ultimately, that's what RevOps is supposed to be, right? It's this umbrella term for marketing, sales, and client success sort of operations to help drive the best possible experience, which is in pursuit of ideally revenue, right? So,
you know, my mentor told me a long time ago that one of the best ways to grow your business is to be easy to do business with and to have experiences that people believe are unforgettable. Mm-hmm. When you think about some of the architecture projects you've worked on, what have been some of the questions that you're trying to answer and help companies solve in that quest for being unforgettable?
Being unforgettable. I don't know if anybody's ever come to me and said, I want to be unforgettable.
Well, maybe they should.
Maybe they should. It's like, gosh, that's a new challenge I have to figure out how to solve. Look, I think the questions that are coming up right now are, at least in some of the latest engagements that I've been a part of, and my experience is obviously unique to just the limited scope of conversations that I have with certain companies. It's really around the enablement piece of both the individual user, the prospect, soon, ideally soon to be customer. How do we enable them to have the most potential to become a customer and to be happy with the product that they're signing up with, which is entirely like one track of conversation. So I've got a journey of like self-service sort of model that's happening there. And then if they want to branch and go talk to a human, because there's lots of us that just want to talk to a human in order to tell me what I need to do next when I'm, you know, signing up for your product or service, how do we move that conversation into a queue outside of the sort of self-service model and ensure that they're in contact with somebody as quickly as possible? And that quickly as possible piece sounds like it should be as easy as, you know, the Wi-Fi signal reaching your phone as soon as your Wi-Fi comes back online, but it's not that fast. There's a lot that happens when you're moving people's information from system to system, and there's a latency problem there. We've talked about it for years. This idea of the speed to lead problem is critical in order to close business. And so a lot of the conversations coming our way are around how do you sort of orchestrate a seamless experience, especially with this, you know, lower touch sort of PLG set of motion that's in market right now, but enable them to have just as much or just as little friction as possible to go then engage with the sales rep. That's a really, really hard challenge to solve. And I don't know that anybody's doing it like perfectly today.
I was just going to ask, do you have examples of organizations or maybe industries where they have a jump start and they're doing it better than others?
You know, I was just about to, yeah, like I was thinking about some of the experiences that I've had. You know, I think there's a reason that Geico wins their awards, not for their advertisements, but for their actual app. Like they've been given a best in class award for their application, their mobile app for quite some time. They do it really well, which makes a lot of sense when you think about it. Like at the end of the day, insurance is all you're doing is interacting with, you know, essentially agents in a time of need, right? And they've created an experience that allows their customers to engage with them in whatever fashion they want. And I will tell you that it feels very seamless. I think they're one organization that I would point to as sort of a best in breed technology and people process sort of orientation.
you bring up something that's interesting, at least on the go-to-market side, and I think we'll lean probably heavily into talking about software companies. But one organization or a couple organizations, I'll even take it a step further and saying that in industry, and I'll do broad sweeping here, but organizations that are involved in e-commerce, I think they've probably answered a lot of these things in trying to make it easy for people to procure, right? The less friction there is, Amazon with their one-click purchase, Walmart with their same-day delivery, like you've got all of these different things based on the customer journey where they've eliminated friction. But when I think about the broader software market and who's out there, I often have to just take my step back and look at it and say, well, who's doing this well and is really providing that experience that is you're easy to do business and you remember? Because I think ultimately what you're saying is like, listen, with Marketecture, what we're trying to do is decrease the friction so we maintain stickiness and ultimately give better experiences for the user regardless of where they are.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that that's a nice summarization of what we're talking about. I would agree. The e-commerce B2C motion in the world is like far better at, you know, they've been trying to solve for the frictionless touch for longer than the B2B market has, for sure. But It's a challenging dynamic to sort of navigate when you're talking about business to business problems, even if it's software as a category. There's a lot of products that are in market that just aren't consumer goods. Right? Like, it's very easy for me as an individual to take a risk for myself. Right? I'll try a product. Sure, I'll give it a shot. Right? But I'm not the owner of, well, I am the owner of this organization that I have, but I'm not the owner of another organization that I work for. As an embedded employee inside of a ecosystem of lots of staff, hundreds, if not many thousands of employees, I don't have the ability to just try things out and see how it goes. And so I'm not saying it's impossible to create this frictionless sale or, you know, move into a PLG motion that allows people to sort of take their journey and test the waters a little bit. But the nature of, you know, purchasing a good for myself with the knowing that I could potentially just return it or throw it away if I don't like the flavor, whatever it is that I'm experimenting with, is that's a risk that I'm choosing to take. And I may find that I really enjoy it, but it's just me and it's a decision for myself. Maybe it's a decision for my family in some cases, or a gift for somebody else. And there's a gift receipt for that. But like in B2B services or software, it's not that way. And so I do think that we're never going to be quite as good at this as our sort of B2C e-commerce counterparts are in the market, because it's just harder. Like B2B business and marketing in general, like B2B marketing is way harder. Like there's just less you can do.
You know, it's interesting you talk about. I was just talking with Brett Sklar yesterday from Grow Powerful, and he runs an agency of fractional CMOs, and he was talking about the shift in economic dynamics that moved from FOMO. Everybody was fear of missing out, right? Like, what am I going to do, to FOMU, which is fear of messing up. And I think we're very much in the category today in the B2B world, and specifically the B2B software space, where a lot of organizations have moved from FOMO to FOMU, which everybody is now playing it safe, right? The risk reward, there seems to be a lot more at stake in the decisions I make based on experience, technology, process, et cetera. And it's, I think, further complicating what operations or what thinking needs to be had at a very bold level to truly disrupt and make changes that will remove friction from that B2B process, right? The B2B process today, we keep saying, well, it's complicated, it's complicated, it's complicated. 100 years ago, people sold irons door to door, right? Like you didn't dial up Amazon and have it delivered the next day. It showed up at your front door. That was hard. They figured out how to make it easier. So I think with the right boldness and thought process, we have enough technology, we have enough smart people, we should be able to make it simpler. Or do you just think that that's not going to be possible?
I mean, look, I do think we can make it simpler. I just don't know that it's going to be I don't know that the psychology of a lot of our buyers, unless you're, you know, there's certainly SaaS products that are sort of consumer grade, right? Like there's a product that I sort of enjoy using. It's called Taplio. You know, again, like I can use that for myself or my business, but like it's relatively low risk because I'm just going to be able to try it out. It's not going to like integrate into all my systems. But on the flip side, there's products like, you know, a Mad Kudu or HubSpot or Chili Piper or whatever, you know, Cabinet M, like all of these tools that are out there in this MarTech landscape that require more than just like a dabble, right? Like it's just, like, you know, you think about a tool like Mavenlink, for example. Okay, well, they're now Contata. They sell resource and project management software, essentially. And so, you know, it's a super powerful way to run a services organization. Well, the thing is that's exactly what it's for. It's to help you run a services organization. And like, just for one second, if you're really good at providing services, like you're an agency of fractional CMOs or you know, you provide implementation services, your skills are that you are really good at providing implementation services, maybe not running a services business. And so you now have to like pull yourself out of, I'm an expert at providing implementation services, and I have to figure out how to be an expert at running a services organization. And how do I do that? Well, maybe there's this tool that can help me. And this tool is telling me that I sort of need to do it in this these couple of different manners, right? It's like how Salesforce prescribed to us that leads somehow, for some reason, should exist as an object in the world. We'll leave that for another podcast one day. But they provided this environment for us to come in. And it was just this like blank slate of like, okay, well, here's the objects and use them at your will, but build your business on this. And the same thing is true. And it's like, well, I now have to figure this whole thing out. And if we're talking about trying to implement and instrument processes around our business to enable the growth in service of providing a better customer experience, there's going to be friction along that journey, no matter what. Because you're asking someone to change their process. You're asking someone to learn something new. And running your business in a new way is hard, but buying a shirt from Amazon is not hard. Because if I start to build a new process for my business and I don't like it, I might find out that I don't like it in 3 months. I might find out that I don't like it in 3 years. But that fear of messing up is real. What if I don't like it? What if I wasted all that money? And so we pay professional services providers and, you know, implementation experts and all these consultants like Gartner and Forrester to tell me what I should do next. And then later on, all the executives go, well, they told me to do it, so it's their fault. It's not my fault.
You know, it's just,
that's not to throw shade at Forrester and Gartner. They provide great recommendations, I'm sure.
Or executives.
Or executives. Nobody ever does that.
No. You know, so it's interesting when you're talking about this. What it triggers for me is thinking about marketing leaders, revenue leaders, people who believe in technology, even, you know, senior leaders inside of organizations. Well, we don't have to hire somebody. We can just go get a technology and deploy it against it. And especially with what we're seeing happening with AI and just the explosion of trying to apply language models to new technology and how do we deploy it and those different things. When should somebody take a step back and go, maybe I have a marketecture problem, or maybe I have too much technology for my goal? Like what are some of the symptoms that they will see where they go, ooh, I should probably talk to somebody, or like where do those things come up for organizations to go, yeah, maybe we shouldn't go buy another tool yet. We should look at auditing or whatever. I don't know, but what does that process look like?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I don't know where the aha moment happens in organizations necessarily. From my experience, I was sort of paying attention to it as the marketing ops professional in going back to that example of sort of my Mavenlink days. I went to our IT sort of procurement team. It was super small organization at the time, right? But before I left, because I ended up boomeranging back there later on, but before I left the first time, I said, hey, we're sort of like creating duplicative efforts across the board here. Like I see we've got HubSpot, we've got, you know, these calendar booking tools, like, you know, HubSpot released their sales stuff and we're trying to use these other sales sort of orchestration things. Like, we really could consolidate all of this into sort of a smaller tech stack and still probably see just as much ROI out of it. But I think it takes someone to try to look for those opportunities. You know, I think marketing operations professionals have an opportunity to do that because they usually have their hands in on a tech stack that you can kind of see the orchestration of how things are supposed to, you know, move from literally top of funnel discovery of your business all the way through. But one way you could start is like do a tech stack diagram. And there's plenty of products out there. CabinetM is super high quality for managing sort of all of your tech stack. I'd say they're geared towards that mid-market enterprise sort of orchestration environment, There's a product called Martech Guru you can look at that looks like, you know, looks at how to sort of how does your data flow. You also don't need another tool to necessarily do it. You could literally just pull up in a, you know, date myself a little bit, like maybe a Visio or, you know, any type of visual sort of diagramming solution that, you know, that you desire, and just start, you know, trying to understand what tools are talking to where, and then go talk to the other reps in your organization and say, what are you using today? And before you know it, you'll probably come up with a pretty robust list of products. And if you really want to, you go take the Martech Tribe does a wonderful tech stack benchmarking survey that we did with them, but they do it on their own for sure. And they'll give you some insights into opportunities to potentially reduce or improve the utilization of your tech stack. But I would say do the audit at least once a year, but probably twice a year.
All right. So I do, I write down all of the tech I have. I map out the Visio. Maybe I do a workflow of data movement and fields. What questions should I be asking? What are the things I should be looking for as I'm doing this now that it's, you know, I've created the map, then what?
I think start asking, are there overlapping capabilities in any of these platforms? What are the use cases of some of the technologies that are in play today? And if they're, look for adoption, I'd say that's another question to try to strive for. Like, just understanding what the tools are is one thing, but if you find that you have incredibly low adoption of the product, you know, maybe 5 out of your 20 reps actually use the thing, you know, maybe tackle solving the adoption problem, or decide that thing's not actually worth like keeping and we should just move on. So I think trying to answer a few of those questions, if there's overlapping capabilities or low adoption, then which problem do you want to sort of solve, drive adoption or get rid of the tool? Overlapping capabilities, you know, definitely get rid of a tool if you can. Look, at the end of the day, people's feelings are going to be like a little bit hurt because, again, like trying to change the way people do work is hard. Whether that's a marketer or a sales rep or a CS rep, it doesn't matter who it is. Like, they get used to, you know, the way things work, and you're going to try to change things on them. But you work for the business. Like, you're there to create an environment that, you know, helps enable the organization to continue to grow. And in some cases, the products that you're going to suggest you add or remove are going to also be the ones that create a better customer journey too. So, but yeah, I think asking those questions are probably key. So playing that back, it's, you know, adoption and overlapping capabilities are things to start looking for right away.
Look, and for most organizations, I think there's a really easy low-hanging fruit. I see this a lot in organizations that I speak with. You have HubSpot talking to Salesforce, where the marketing team needs to have insight and visibility into BDR, SDR activity against the MQLs that they've deployed. But the lead moves from HubSpot to Salesforce to Outreach.io, and the visibility becomes almost non-existent for the marketing team. A deployment of HubSpot Sales Hub could, in fact, potentially eliminate Salesforce and Outreach, or, you know, at least could remove the Outreach need and have that documentation pulled into HubSpot. Now, I know that's an oversimplification, but it seems to me like that's what you're talking about. When there's those capabilities, you can look at, instead of having 3 systems and paying 3 times for a thing, look to consolidate if possible.
Yeah. I think the more you can consolidate. And so, like, going back to this idea of marketecture, like I gave this example of, you know, a data warehouse Syncery type of thing. Like, that's a consolidation play ultimately. Like, you're moving data into one place and then moving that data into the tools that you need it to go to. Yeah. There are many tools that can go into that, but ultimately it's a consolidation of information type of play. The same thing is true when you're talking about I could just use HubSpot Sales instead of Outreach, or you name the tool. Or if like we're dead set on keeping that one solution in place, then at a bare minimum, you better start passing that data back over to Salesforce or back into HubSpot in some way, so that, you know, the team doesn't create a bad customer experience, right? But yes, ultimately, I think it's about consolidation of tools and getting them to have the data live in as few places as is necessary.
I don't think there's a better way to close this out. Getting data to live in as few places as necessary. That's, yes. I think that there's a lot of value to organizations in that. Any final thoughts, things that we may have missed today as it relates to Marketecture that a listener should know?
I think keep your eyes on the market for the next decade or so of what's happening with the warehouse native ecosystem. You know, when you're starting to instrument your go-to-market motion on a data warehouse and using that first, that's going to be really interesting and it's going to be a new skill set. I think it categorically falls into this Marketecture thing, generally speaking, but you're going to have these applications that are built on top of the data warehouse, which, you know, Salesforce is not a data warehouse. HubSpot is not a data warehouse. It's just not how they work. And so it'll be really interesting to see what happens as that ecosystem evolves. It's like, do I really need some of these other platforms in play, especially in that, you know, big e-commerce conversation, right? Like, that's really, really interesting because that's how a lot of these e-commerce businesses run. But I say keep an eye on the data warehouse stuff, the warehouse native applications for that.
That's great. Mike, it sounds like you do some consulting on this or at least have some insight where you could provide direction for companies seeking how to improve their Marketecture. If somebody wants to get a hold of you on how to do better Marketecture or get involved with MoPros, what's the best way to get a hold of the Riz?
I am Mike D, as in David Rizzo. So Mike D Rizzo is my handle. You can kind of find me on LinkedIn/in/Mike D Rizzo. It's probably the best place, if not joining us in our Slack community at marketingops.com. And that's free. So you can reach me there anytime. Also, my phone number is no, would be happy to either help out, provide some advice, or I happen to know, you know, at least 4,000 or so folks that I could reach out to point you in the right direction. So if it's not me, I bet you I know somebody.
That's fantastic. Well, thanks again, Mike, for sharing your insights on Marketecture. For those listening, thanks for tuning again this week to the summit. Just trying to keep it real. Things that are interesting, places to learn, places to go. And until next week, I'm Kyle Hamer, your host. Keep pressing on, moving forward, and never giving up.